and welcome to Omfed's In Conversation series, which features interviews with some of the world's leading policymakers, including central bank representatives, academics, and all kinds of experts from the financial services sector. I'm very pleased today to be joined by Robert Steeman, who's the Chief Executive Officer at the UK Debt Management Office. This is David Marsh in London speaking to Robert Steeman. Robert, you have been at the helm of the Debt Management Office for 15 years. The Debt Management Office itself is 20 years old. What have you learnt in that time? What are the big issues where you think you might now know more than you did at the beginning?
I came from the private sector, and this might sound like a very correct cliche, but one of the things that struck me was that the level of expertise which I found actually already in the office, and which I encountered also in the Treasury itself, in terms of market knowledge and market expertise and other important aspects such as operational matters, was extraordinarily high. And I think sometimes people sort of perhaps slightly underestimate the quality perhaps that might exist in what actually is just another part of the civil service.
But that's a good view to have. On the other hand, there has been in the external environment great change. We've had the financial crisis, we've had a big increase in debt issuance by the UK because of the parlous economic position that we were in 10 years ago, a lot of international issuance of debt. Do you have to be these days much more aware of the world outside and also much more concerned with relationship management with the big international investors, including sovereign funds and central banks?
Yes. And when we first started, our borrowing account was much less than it is now. And I used to perhaps go consciously abroad to actually seek out potential investors at most sort of once every one, almost 2 years to certain key destinations. That has changed fundamentally. We have to reach out. We have to be more proactive. We cannot take for granted that people will just happily turn up and buy our debt. The other thing I would say which has changed also in particular, not just the nature of the investor base and how we interact with the investor base, but the way the market itself has fundamentally changed. It's not just so much bigger, it is also much deeper. It is more liquid. Thank goodness, because it's that liquidity which has enabled us and would enable any other major debt manager to access markets and raise funds on a scale that 15 years ago would not have been imaginable.
Sterling is still one of the world's major reserve currencies, number 4 or 5. Is that a good thing, do you think? Because it may also lead to some greater responsibilities in your world?
I think it's probably a good thing from a debt management perspective, in as much as it adds to the diversification of the investor base. I don't think it's necessarily a deliberate target of ours to say we want to be a reserve currency and we need to have that reserve currency status, but having it is undoubtedly of benefit. You say we're the fourth or fifth largest reserve currency. I think that position is not a bad one for us to be in. We wouldn't probably want to be the world's largest reserve currency because that brings with it all sorts of issues. I'm speaking purely from a debt management perspective, which could complicate things quite significantly.
When you're looking at the euro area, where after all there are a certain number of countries linked together by monetary union, but they don't have a debt union and they don't have a single government, does that give Britain advantages, would you say, over individual euro area issues that in a medieval sense we are a sovereign country?
I think it does, and it does so on a couple of different levels. The first level is the sense that we are, and I've said this previously, sovereign in our own currency. There is also an issue around an understanding that the institutional framework which exists here is such that this sovereignty, if you like, works to our advantage in the way that it probably would not, dare I say, perhaps one or two smaller European countries, Eurozone countries. The idea that such matters such as debt management policy, debt management issuance would have to take into account what all sorts of other jurisdictions are doing, that, I think, would complicate matters hugely. We do not have to take into account in our issuance plans what another country might or might not be doing at a particular given time, unless it's so significant. That's very different for the Eurozone.
As a final couple of questions, I have to ask you about Britain's withdrawal from the European Union. First of all, looking backwards, the fact that we haven't had a fixed exchange rate ever since the relatively short adventure of the exchange rate mechanism to 1992, we've had a series of, shall we say, misadventures over that period of time, the last 20, 25 years, which has meant we've been able to devalue or lower the value of the currency. The last time when we had a serious fall was, of course, after the referendum in June 2016. What did your interlocutors say to you the day after we decided to leave?
I don't think the day after we decided to leave, it was a Friday, I don't think any of them actually spoke to me, which was probably a good thing. But as a serious comment, the exchange rate, as you are inferring, has acted as an extremely important, for want of a better word, safety valve. The pressures that you will also get from the international investor community and the focus that would have been relentless potentially in our bond market were mitigated by the fact that we had a floating exchange rate. And it's not only the fact that that continues, but I think people need to understand that a floating exchange rate is also something that allows the market to express a view which it wants to express in a way that would be much harder if it was only focusing on bond market and a limited amount of areas or tools in which it could operate. So I feel quite strongly that it's been a huge boon, having a floating exchange rate, not being, for instance, part of a single currency. I think we would have faced huge pressures in any case, but they would have been magnified if we did not have that safety valve.
Final question, not asking you to give advice to your political masters, but what do you think the government needs to do right in order to make sure during the Brexit process of the next year or so that we somehow keep faith with the very considerable number of foreign investors that actually have put money into gilts? What do we need to do right and what could go wrong?
In terms of what we have to do right, I think it's incredibly important. I mean, this is all about credibility. The nature of sovereign debt is that it needs to be credible in order to be a serious proposition for an investor. So credibility in terms of not just economic policy, but around a country's institutions, institutional framework, even something as basic as the rule of law, that credibility is absolutely key. In a strange way, even it's important for a debt manager. People would think, how are the two linked? But actually debt management and the price of sovereign debt is arguably a manifestation of credibility and faith in government credit. So any government needs to make sure that it maintains and does what it can to uphold that credibility.
Robert Stephen, thank you very much.